This is East End Inc. Today we present Queen's College professor Fred Gardafay discussing the depiction of Italians in the work of John Steinbeck and Pietro Di Donato. The program was recorded at Canio's Books in Sag Harbor.
Did you know that Christ in Concrete came out in 1939 and the same year that Steinbeck's Grapes of Wrath, and everybody knows Steinbeck's Grapes of Wrath, but nobody knows Christ in Concrete. Why is that? And that has been the basis for my career in Italian-American studies, which I'm kind of in the twilight of right now, although I keep trying to put more light in there and make it look like afternoon. So years ago, I was driving down the road on my way from San Jose to Fresno, California, and I was struck by the number of Italian names that appeared on highway billboards, wineries, food businesses, tile companies. And then I noticed a sign for a Salinas exit. I had obviously been going in the wrong direction. But I was happy for the mistake, as I had been able for the first time to get a look at the geography covered in much of what Steinbeck has written. And I wondered if there had been as many Italians back in his time as there were today. Now, Steinbeck was always writing about this area, the same area where the Italians were as well Japanese, who were considered enemy aliens for a period, who had been arrested and relocated during World War II in February of 1942, where radicchio seeds from Italy thrived. This is that Salinas. Radicchio seeds from Italy thrived, where Japanese planted the garlic that made Gilroy famous. The scene, I realize, is all about these days, but back in those days, migrants like the Chicanos, whom Steinbeck calls paisanos, and the white migrant workers called Okies, were the dominant subjects of his writings. And his concern was the interaction between the natives and those other migrants who had come to California from places out east and south. So the Italians had not played a major role in his earlier works. As far as I can tell, to this day, no one still has yet written a word about the Italians in Steinbeck's works. Having scoured all his major novels and stories, I found very little presence of them. But what I've noticed about those that I've found is that his earliest depictions are more like caricatures. He kind of throws them in just to move the story along. And it's not until his later work that Italian figures become full-blown characters. His later work happens when? When he's living here in Sag Harbor. For the purposes of my talk today, I want to concentrate on two Italians who play significant roles in two of Steinbeck's novels. Torelli, who comes from his 1935, his pre-Grapes of Wrath, Tortilla Flat, and Alfio Marullo, who comes in Winter of Our Discontent, which takes place right where we're staying. A little over 25 years apart. Tortilla Flat was 1935, and Winter of Our Discontent was 1961. And completely different characterizations. But before I go into the readings, I need to lay a little groundwork for understanding the difference between caricatures and characters. Now, the earliest presence of Italians in Steinbeck's work is minimal, since his attention was drawn to the tension between the landowners and the workers of the land, kind of a working class bourgeois conflict. So it is not surprising, then, that Italians who do appear, such as Torelli in Tortilla Flat, are simply drawn caricatures and not developed into full-blown characters. Oxford English Dictionary tells us that in art, a caricature is, quote, a grotesque or ludicrous representation of persons or things by exaggeration of their most characteristic and striking features. And a portrait of other artistic representation in which the characteristic features of the original are exaggerated with ludicrous effect. This often happens. It has to happen in theater, film, and so on, where we need to get instant recognition so we have an understanding that drives the plot towards a climax. Often caricatures are more easily recognized than a detailed portrait that is faithful to a person's visage. We see that in creating Torelli, Steinbeck uses those broad brushstrokes of high-strung temperament, exaggerated behavior, and one-dimensional thinking to reflect Italian culture in this novel. Now, unfortunately, this is the same kind of stereotypes that have been worked on for at least a century in the United States. In Tortilla Flat, Steinbeck acknowledges the presence of Italians in his early descriptions of Monterey. He makes a distinction between them and the Chicanos, who are the major subject of that novel. He writes, "The lower parts of the town are inhabited by Americans, Italians, catchers and canners of fish. But on the hill where the forest and town intermingle, where the streets are innocent of asphalt," interesting, innocent of asphalt, "and the corners free of streetlights, the old inhabitants of Monterey are embattled as the ancient Britons are embattled in Wales. These are the paisanos," these are the Chicanos. And he almost elevates them to this kind of noble. We learn early on that there's a great deal of tension between the Italians and the Chicanos. And while it is a tension that motivates much of the behavior between members of each group, one might speculate that this tension could be, since Italians here are the new immigrants, and they're doing financially better than the Chicanos, who had inhabited these lands long before the Italians' arrivals. But Steinbeck never explains this, as the following makes clear. And he writes, "Race antipathy overcame Danny's good sense. He menaced the fishermen, Sicilian bastards, he called them, and scum from the prison island, and dogs of dogs of dogs. He cried, 'Chinga la madre, yo, deo, deo.' He thumbed his nose and made obscene gestures below the waist. The fishermen only grinned and shifted their oars and said, 'Hello, Danny. Where do you get home? How come around tonight? No, when do you get home? Come around tonight. We got new wine.' The Italians were fishermen like the father of Joe DiMaggio and providers of wine. Steinbeck draws one of them by the name of Torelli in his novel, who along with his wife becomes a foil for the follies and tricks of the paisanos and Danny. Torelli's Italianness comes to us in wildly emotional reactions to the paisanos and never is grounded in anything resembling real Italian-American culture. Another dimension of his caricature results from the fact that he is never given a first name. He's just Torelli, like Dante or something. Michelangelo, he's just given a first name."
This is East End Inc. We're listening to Queen's College professor Fred Gardefee discussing the depiction of Italians in the work of John Steinbeck and Pietro di Donato.
I want to shift into Pietro di Donato. Why? Because, you know, also being a Long Island writer and being always in the shadow, as he is today in today's talk, he's in the shadow of Steinbeck in a sense. I believe it is that I know Steinbeck read Di Donato, and Di Donato read Steinbeck because they were, you know, arch enemies in a sense that they were at least fighting each other for the attention. They both had bestsellers. There's no encounters between them. There's no letters between them. But you could tell in their writing, when, you know, I've been reading both of these writers for the better part of 40, 50 years, and the more you read one, the more you see him in the other. And it wasn't like they studied together, but you could tell from them reading each other. Pietro di Donato is among a handful of Italian-American writers who joined the Communist Party, which he did at the age of 16 on the night that Sacco and Vanzetti were executed. He took up writing during a period in which he was out of work. His first short story, Christ in Concrete, which dramatized the early death of his father in a construction accident, was published in Esquire magazine in March of 1937, and the next year reprinted in Edward O'Brien's Best Short Stories of 1938. What's going on in American culture at this time is the worker writer. They're interested in what the worker has to say about the world and their ability to write. Within 2 years, this short story grows into a novel. Publishers came and said, "We want this guy." You know, Di Donato was a bricklayer. And I'll tell you a little bit about why he became a bricklayer in the novel. Published in 1930, becomes the main selection of the Book of the Month Club in 1939, chosen over Steinbeck's Grapes of Wrath. And the literary community at the time was, who is this guy? You know, Steinbeck had been around. Steinbeck had earned his dues. 4 years before this, he had written Tortilla Flat and so on. So the Grapes of Wrath is this great kind of, but Sebeck was not a worker writer. He was a writer who wrote about workers. Giordano never intended to be a writer, but the novel's success placed him in a national spotlight. Only recently have critics begun to realize the true revolutionary figure that he was. Yet despite his absence in critical studies of American writers, Giordano is perhaps the most well-known of the early Italian-American writers because of the impact Christ in Concrete had and still continues to have on its readers. People have referred to him as the grandfather of Italian-American literature, and now they're doing things like flying people like me over to Italy to teach in American studies classes these novels, because the Italians who maybe have read them, maybe haven't read them, see that the young kids are interested in this story, whereas the professors weren't, I can tell you. For many critics, Giordano's first novel has become the prototypical Italian-American novel. His Italianità becomes the most obvious through the novel's diction. Giordano's word choice and word order has been pointed out in several articles. They recreate the rhythms and sonority of the Italian language. Now, there's many different registers. I've written about this. A lot of people have. I'm not going to go into a great thing about it. I just want to alert you to, he uses the thee, the thy, the they, which comes from where? The Bible, the influence of the Bible, that diction. And he does it when he wants to elevate what it is somebody has to say. And then he uses broken English, and he'll use Italian, the Italian language, words that are in Italian. But he's more likely to use a stilted, broken word order, you know, because Italian is an inflected language. It doesn't make a difference where you put the noun and the adjective. And so he does that in ways. And he'll literally translate Italian saying so that you will not think. You'll say, well, what the heck is going on here? There's a curse. Well, he starts saying saints up and down and sideways, and Italian would be sante. You know, the Italians will take saints who don't perform miracles when they want them, and they'll just curse the heck out of the saints. And it doesn't make a sense in English when you say saints upside down, up and down and around, but you know, in the Italian language, it's, you know, it's, people know what's going on, and they're taking the saint, and they're twisting him and turning him around and trying, you know. When you have to sell a house, where do you bury the St. Joseph statue? And how do you bury it?
Upside down.
Upside down where? Front yard, not backyard. I once had a neighbor bury a, he didn't know the difference between St. Joseph and St. Anthony. He buried St. Anthony right side up in the backyard, complained. I went and got him a St. Joseph statue. Bingo, the next week he sold the house. I don't really believe in that stuff, but I do. While other Italian-American writers were portraying characters who struggled to fit into American life, Giordano is rejecting the American dream in this novel, again, which is why it continues to last, and which is a similar theme. You know, the idea of what's the American dream and how does one achieve it? He and Steinbeck were so together on so many things. So when we talk about grapes and concrete, it was the workers who picked the grapes, and it was the workers who made the concrete. So you get this kind of brotherhood in theme, but you also get a brotherhood in style when you look at these things. Prior to his death in 1992, Giordano had completed a novel called The American Gospels, which you can find online. We're trying to get it printed. It was never printed. In which Christ, in the form of a black woman, comes to earth at the end of the world to cast judgment on key historical figures of contemporary America. This theme of Christ as a woman can be found in much of what Giordano has written. And it is a theme that is usually left in the shadow of the more obvious interpretations of his work. But I think it's a theme that needs to be explored even more. And the reason he does this is because his Catholicism has its roots in pre-Christian matriarchal worship. As Giordano himself admitted, quote, "I'm a sensualist," he said, "and I respond to the sensuality of the Holy Roman Catholic Church. It's art, it's music, it's fragrances, it's colors, it's architecture, and so forth, which is truly Italian. We Italians are essentially pagans and realists. Now, you have to know that the word pagan comes from the Latin word paganus, which means peasant. And so the idea of being a pagan should not have all that kind of black devil connection that we try to put on it sometimes. It was a way of saying, you peasants don't understand, you peasants don't underlong, unless you convert to this religion here, this Christianity. And they did, in many ways. Just in, okay, you want us to do that? You know, how about this woman? Oh, she could be the mother of Christ. Okay, we're going to keep worshiping, which is why the Italians continue to worship all these statues of Madonnas and women. But it goes way back before Christ, many of these statues. Christ in Concrete is perhaps the most mythical text of Italian-American literature, as the myth that presents an heroic figure, Paul, who searches for God in the form of Christ, who he believes can save his family from the terrible injustices brought upon them through a heartless society. The novel is divided into five parts: Jeremio, the father's name, Job or Job, Tenement, Fiesta, and Annunziata. So the father begins the novel, the mother ends the novel, each focusing on key figures in the myth. In Jeremio and Job, Deuteronauer presents J-O-B as the antagonist, which controls the Italian workers led by his father, Jeremio. Through the human forces of the heartless foreman, whom he calls Murdin, M-U-R-D-I-N, the state bureaucracy that sides with the construction company during a hearing into Jeremio's death. Jeremio was killed in a construction accident that was deemed an accident when really it was the fault of the construction company not reinforcing the walls as they were tearing down some other thing. But it's also, the Catholic Church, through an Irish priest who refused to offer the family no more than a few table scraps from his rich dinner. Job, which never appears with the expected articles, like he went to the job or let's look for a job, is depicted as a living thing, quote, that loomed up damp, shivery gray, its giant members waiting. So Job becomes this kind of monster. Job serves as the means by which, quote, America beautiful will eat you and spit your bones into the earth's hole. As one worker predicts, in Tenement, the third chapter, young Paul comes to learn about the forces of good and evil in the world, and good only comes from workers' community, which is portrayed in the chapter Fiesta. Now, Paul's mother, Annunziata, who is pregnant at the opening of the novel, serves as a figure of the Madonna and represents the immigrant's faith in God, whom she invokes through prayers such as, God of my fathers, God of my girlhood, God of my mating, God of my innocent children, upon your bosom I lay my voice. To this widow alone, black and shrouded, lend of your strength that she may live only to raise her children. In this chapter devoted to her widowhood, Annunziata attempts to raise her children according to this Christian myth, but in the process she loses her son and the faith she hopes to pass on to him through recollections of her husband's show of faith. An heroic struggle occurs between man and God through the forces and the figures of Jeremio and Job. When Jeremio believes that he can gain the means to live and to eventually achieve the American dream from Job, he says, where no boss in the world can then rob me of my joy of my home. But the money he has saved for the house must be used to bury him, who along with the workers become sacrificial victims to Job and to the greed and sensitivity of the company. As Paul begins to take up the struggle where his father left off through death, he begins to see through the mass mechanism of this myth and realizes the only way to beat Job is to become part of the system to fight it. So you begin to see these common elements between Steinbeck and Deuteronauer of inquiring, to what end does capitalism go? And this is exactly why their work was championed at a time when many of the literary critics at the time were very much interested in what was going on in Russia was the Russian Revolution going to turn into, like, creating a utopia? You know, what goes on with the worker? And it's right before the McCarthy period that begins there. By the end of the novel, Paul's faith is nearly destroyed, as evidenced by his crushing of a crucifix offered to him by his mother. However, the final image of the novel suggests that the matriarchal powers are still there for her children to follow, and that they should follow them. But this haunting image can also suggest that the mother has become the new Christ, who, in witnessing what America has done to her son, dies and through her death frees her son from the burden of his Catholic past. The mother's death is quite different from that of the father. The father's death led Paul in search of Christ. His mother's death sends him in search of something beyond Christ. His rejection of Christ as a means to survive in this world contributes to his mother's collapse. She just can't take it. She then becomes the basis for a new faith, a faith in himself, a faith that his mother urges her children toward as she tells them to love, 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 ever love our Paul. For Dieter Nadel, this figure of the dying mother replaces Christ as the figure through which man can redeem himself. There's no redemption through the father. For if Paul stays in the system, if he continues to interact with Job, he will end up sharing the same destiny as his father. In fact, his godfather also dies on the job later on. By directing his character's rage at the employers who exploit immigrant laborers, Pietro Dieter Nadel argues for a solidarity among American workers and requires that they look into each other to solve their problems. Just as it is the Italian community through the extended family that keeps Jeremio's family together, it is the extended family of the workers that must help each other. Dieter Nadel's rewriting of the Christ, myth of Christ, while leading him away from organized Roman Catholicism, leads him more towards the peasant, pagan culture of his past. This return, while implicit in this reading I gave you today of Christ in Concrete, becomes explicit in all of his later work. Now, you should know that at the start of World War II, he registered as a conscious objector and worked in a government camp in Cooperstown. He married in 1942. He was married to Helen Dean in a civil ceremony presided over by Fiorello LaGuardia. His 1949 Christ in Concrete was made into a film directed by blacklisted director Edward Demetric and adapted for the screen by Ben Marsman. Dieter Nadel once said that Frank Capra, he was with Fellini in one of the motion picture canteens. Frank Capra comes through and he says, "Pete, when are you going to let me make your film?" Imagine what would have happened if Capra would have made Christ in Concrete. And he said, "You capitalist pig, I'll never let you make that film." And he ended up giving it to Edward Demetric, who was blacklisted, and the film had to be made in England, and there was all kinds of, but and all of the actors were blacklisted actors, and some of them were beginning actors. And it's interesting to see these young Italian-American characters speak in British English as they're trying to speak to their father. So if you ever get a chance to see it, it's worth seeing, but it just never would have had the impact. And they had to sneak it back into the United States. Well, they couldn't use the title Christ in Concrete. The British censors wouldn't let them use the word Christ in the title. So it became Give Us This Day. And when they had to sneak it back into the United States, they snuck it back as Salt to the Devil. It won an award in 1949 Venice Film Festival, but it's as far as it went. Dieter Nadel's final novel was an attempt to resolve some of the sacred profane dilemma, but still has yet to be published. It's been set, it's been rejected by a lot of different places, but we have, you know, I'm one of the people who are working on publishing it, but we're working on it. But, you know, what we can see here is that he had to struggle in ways, and what happened with Dieter Nadel was a bricklayer his whole life. Whereas Steinbeck, I don't know, were you here when Steinbeck, you weren't here at Japan, you know, when Steinbeck was here. He didn't have to go back to manual labor where Pietro Dieter Nadel always worked as a laborer. In fact, his was one house in Setauket that I had always hoped that people would save. Why? Because he built a lot. He built the whole house himself. Plus, he built the wall, you know. But I, from what I understand from the sons, they, you know, when they had to sell the house, everything went with it, and it's been adapted. And, you know, people have changed it, and so on and so forth. So what you'll see then is this kind of affinity that I'm not even sure the two writers saw in their own life. You know, the use of, you know, the same kind of stylistic work that was done, the techniques that were used in their writing. Well, subject matter, certainly they would have seen and agreed upon. But I think by looking at Steinbeck's use of, you see this growth in Steinbeck, but you also see, I think, some of the influence that he might have had from Dieter now in terms of depicting the Italians.
This is East End Inc. We heard Fred Gardafay, Distinguished Professor of English and Italian-American Studies at Queen's College and also at the John D. Calandro Italian-American Institute. Professor Gardafay discussed the depiction of Italians in the work of John Steinbeck and Pietro Di Donato. We heard a portion of his talk. The complete recording is available at moreeastendinc.blogspot.com. Steinbeck's Grapes of Wrath and Di Donato's Christ in Concrete were both published in 1939. Christ in Concrete depicts the life of Italian immigrants on the Lower East Side of Manhattan in the 1920s. It is the story of a 12-year-old boy who must support his family after his father's untimely death in a construction accident. Grapes of Wrath, Steinbeck's Pulitzer Prize-winning epic of the Great Depression, chronicles the Dust Bowl migration of the 1930s and tells the story of one Oklahoma farm family driven from their homestead and forced to travel west to the promised land of California. Upcoming literary events produced by Canio's Cultural Cafe are online in the calendar of events at canios.wordpress.com. East End Inc. is heard on the fourth and occasional fifth Wednesday at 6:30 a.m. and 8 p.m. Programs are archived at moreeastendinc.blogspot.com. Podcasts are at soundcloud.com. Search for East End Inc. East End Inc. is produced by Tony Ernst with the aid of Marianne Calendrill and Catherine Zoka. This is Hazel Kahn.